Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into a really foundational document out of South Africa. It's the National Policy Framework for Women's Empowerment and Gender Equality, often just called the GPF. And our mission here is to really, you know, cut through the official language and get to the core of this blueprint for change.
And you really have to understand the history to get this document.
Right.
The GPF didn't just appear out of nowhere. It's a direct response to a double legacy.
Not just apartheid.
Not just institutional racism, no, but also a really deep-seated patriarchy. I mean, we're talking about a system where sociocultural rules literally made women minors, both in public and private.
Wow.
So this framework's whole purpose is to start reversing centuries of that disempowerment.
So it's not just another policy paper, then. It sounds more like a national vision.
That's a great way to put it. It sets the overarching principles that every government sector is supposed to integrate.
So it's the standard setter. It's not telling the Ministry of Health exactly what to do step by step.
Exactly. It's not prescriptive in that way. It provides the map, not the turn-by-turn directions. It's structured really logically, too, across 8 chapters. It goes from the situational analysis and the vision all the way through the institutional framework to, you know, monitoring and evaluation.
I want to zero in on that philosophy. Why did they choose a basic needs approach? It feels like prioritizing security over, say, a purely rights-based strategy from the get-go.
It's a very pragmatic choice, really. It's based on reality. The document is clear that the majority of South Africa's poor are women, and most of them are in rural or peri-urban areas.
So you have to start there.
You have to. Satisfying these immediate practical needs, we're talking access to water, housing, a basic income, that's seen as the necessary precondition.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You can't really focus on political empowerment if you can't feed your family, right?
Precisely. And this distinction is key. It means the GPF ensures gender equality isn't just some aspirational goal.
It's central to everything.
It is. They combine that women's empowerment focus on practical needs with the bigger gender and development approach for strategic needs. It's how they avoid the old trap of treating equality as, you know, end of the day business.
Which brings us to the really urgent challenges the document highlights.
Yeah.
I mean, beyond the obvious economics, what did the GPF see as the biggest institutional levers causing this feminization of poverty?
It points to 3 critical interlocking areas.
Okay.
First, differential access to resources, specifically land. You have these entrenched cultural practices and patriarchal systems that just severely limit women's control over land.
A huge structural barrier.
A huge one. Second, the labor market. Women are systematically concentrated in low-paying, often casual and insecure jobs. And then finally, there's this tragic intersection of health and violence.
Right.
HIV/AIDS disproportionately hits women because of these power imbalances, and then pervasive violence against women is just made so much worse by that economic vulnerability.
The document also specifically calls out engaging women with science and technology. Is that just a modernization goal?
It is, but it's also deeply strategic. In a modern, knowledge-intensive economy, you simply can't afford to exclude half your population from technological progress.
It's self-defeating.
Completely. It's about enhancing national productivity and just making sure women aren't left on the wrong side of the development curve.
So if this is the national blueprint, how do you even measure success? What's the mechanism to make sure all these government sectors actually deliver on this?
Yeah, that's the key question. Implementation relies on what they call a comprehensive national gender machinery.
Sounds serious.
It is. It has structures across the presidency, parliament, and independent bodies like the Commission on Gender Equality. But the really clever part is the dual measurement strategy.
Okay, tell me about that.
They adapt these international metrics. You've got the Gender-Related Development Index, or GDI, and the Gender Empowerment Measure, the GUM.
And what's the insight from using both of them?
Well, the GDI tracks that basic access, the practical stuff. Uh-huh. Things like enhanced earning power or reduced vulnerability to HIV/AIDS.
The foundations.
Exactly. But the GEM, that's what forces accountability on who holds the actual political power. It makes sure the government isn't just counting more girls in schools, but that those women are actually moving into decision-making roles.
Ah, I see. So it shifts the goal from just having resources to having real influence.
That's it. From passive access to active political influence.
So ultimately, the GPF defines this national vision and provides the broad, measurable guidelines for everyone else to follow.
Exactly. It sets the minimum standards for resources and the key indicators. It provides the necessary blueprint.
But the document itself notes that the most profound long-term hurdle isn't creating the structure, It's the required shift in societal norms.
That's the long game, yes.
Achieving true equality demands fundamentally changing attitudes, values, and cultural beliefs. So for you, what kind of deeply ingrained cultural shifts will prove the hardest to monitor and even harder to achieve over the next generation? That feels like the real deep dive awaiting South Africa.